Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 1st, 2012. The first show of September 2012. This is episode 905. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com now. Click the radio microphone and enter Tech Guy. That's Stamps.com. And use the offer code Tech Space Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial right now at gotomeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code TECH. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk tech. First day of September. Oh, it's going to be a big month, too, for technology. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO if you want to talk about anything with a chip in it, whether it's a computer, you want to talk about the internet. I guess the internet has a chip in it somewhere out there in the cloud. We could also talk about cell phones. Well, they got chips in them. Home theater. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, joins us in about half an hour, 33 after the hour. Anything else you want to talk about? If it's got technology, I'd love to talk about it. I may not know anything about it if it's something kind of obscure, but I'm kind of well versed in the mainstream cell phone, home theater, computer stuff. I just read a study. I don't know how good this is. I don't know how you know how studies are. I use the word cloud, C-L-O-U-D, cloud, you know, puffy little cloud, for anything that's in the internet. It comes from an old diagramming standard where when stuff goes up to the internet, it kind of enters the cloud, right? Because you don't really know what's going on in there, and then it comes out of the cloud. So since, let's say you want to surf to Yahoo.com. Well, your computer connects into the cloud, and then things happen in the cloud, and then there's Yahoo on the other end, and its stuff goes back into the cloud. And so now lately we use it for cloud computing, right? Your stuff is stored in the cloud, which means just, on another computer on the internet. It's really not so puffy. But apparently that's a term that seems to be confusing people. Citrix did a survey. 1,000, and by the way, I guess I should say Citrix, of course, good friends of ours. They sponsor the show with their products, Go to My PC and Go to Meeting and so forth. But they did a survey because they're a cloud computing company, right? Everything that they do is out there on the internet. And they surveyed 1,000 people to find out what normal people, by the way, what they thought cloud computing meant. 40% say the chief advantage is it lets them work at home while naked. Well, that's not untrue. A third says the cloud lets them work on their tans at the beach. Okay, all right. Another third said that biggest benefit of the cloud allows them to store embarrassing videos. I have a feeling that the questions were, something like, what's the best use of the cloud? And then they gave them the answer, I can compute at home naked. The weirdest one, though, is that a certain number of people said that the cloud didn't work when it was raining. And I think the more serious stuff, 54% say they never use cloud computing. Now, I got to tell you, every one of you does. If you've ever gone on the internet, that's a cloud, all right? That's what the cloud is, the internet. So you do. I mean, when you're surfing to a website, the website is on the other end of the cloud. So that shows some confusion about it. 45% do say they've played online games. That's cloud. 29% store photos online. That's cloud. 22% store music or videos online. That's cloud. And 19% use online file share. So a lot of people still use cloud computing. I think that the silly answers probably should be thrown out of the survey. But I do think it's interesting that so many people are confused by this term. So that's all it means is the cloud is the internet. Do you use the internet? Yes. You're using cloud computing. And if you store stuff up there, then you really are using cloud computing. And no, it doesn't affect it when it rains. It rains. That's nothing to do with it. Now that we've cleared that up. See, this is why you listen to this show. It's learn important stuff like that. Well, we got a big week coming up. We've already kind of started this past week. The IFA conference was going on in Berlin, Germany. IFA stands for some German phrase that I can't even pronounce, but essentially it's used to be a radio conference, and it's become a mobile computing conference. And Samsung and a number of other companies took this conference as an opportunity to announce Windows 8 stuff. So Samsung announced its Windows 8 phone, the Ative S, and it looks nice, 4.8 inches. Windows 8 phone is the successor to the current Windows 7 phone. Well, that makes sense. It's one better. And it's completely incompatible. And if you have an existing Windows 7 phone, forget it. You're not going to get an upgrade. You have to buy a new Windows 8 phone to take advantage of it. Microsoft has decided to call everything kind of Windows 8, even though they're not really compatible. So you might think, oh, great. Well, I'll get a Windows 8 computer and then it'll be, I can share apps. No. They look the same. The Metro, no, but you can't. They're different. They also announced Windows 8 computers. And, you know, I've been saying for a while, you should wait to find out what these look like if you think you're going to upgrade to Windows 8. Because I suspected, and I was right, that Windows 8 computers would be kind of different from Windows 7 computers. And many of them have touch. A lot of them are detachable so that you can turn it into a tablet. Many of them are convertible. We've seen these before but Windows 8 is so touch specific that I thought that, and I suspected there'd be kind of a lot of touch in Windows 8 computers. And Lenovo, Dell, Samsung all announced touch enabled Windows 8 computers. They also announced their Windows RT tablets, which look exactly like a Windows 8 phone or a Windows 8 desktop. You know, they've got that tiled Metro interface, but they're not compatible with either. So it's I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of confusion. So you heard it here that, you know, Windows 8 on the desktop or laptop may look the same. It has that style. Microsoft doesn't want to call it Metro anymore, but that's what it is. It's that tiled style that started on Windows Phone. Applications written for that do not run on the tablet, which is Windows RT. I don't know why they call it that, but that's what they call it, Windows RT. It looks exactly the same. If you line that up next to a Windows 8 computer, you'd say the same. No. And then if you shrink the screen a little bit to 4.8 inches or thereabouts, you're going to get Windows 8 phone, which looks exactly the same, but isn't either. So just so you know... They're going to call, apparently, I was surprised, they're going to call the phone a Windows 8 phone, not a Windows Phone 8. It's all Windows 8 now. And this could be a little confusing to some. Just want to let you know ahead of time so you know what's going to look like. And, you know, and if you've been waiting to see, should I buy a Windows 8 computer? Well, now they're out. You might say, hey, gee, I think I'm going to get a Windows 7 computer and just stop there. I think a lot of people are going to do that. I don't need to go to Windows 8. It's so different. Microsoft has really said, nope, we're gonna bet the farm on a completely new tablet-centric. I really think that's the bottom line on this tablet-centric operating system. Now, this week, we will see Nokia presumably announce its Windows 8 phone. They have a very good Windows 7 phone, the Lumia 800 and 900. They may announce a Windows RT tablet. I wouldn't be surprised. And then, that's September 5th. I think Google and Motorola are announcing a new Android phones then. I think the Droid HD, I think, is what they're going to call it. And then September 6th, Amazon has a big announcement. And the consensus seems to be new Amazon Kindles, including a new tablet, Kindle Fire tablet. That's gotten to be a very competitive space. Now, the little 7-inch tablets, because Apple supposedly is coming out with a 7.85-inch tablet. It's really more like an 8-inch, isn't it? Sometime next month. And then Apple's, I'm sorry, this is confusing, I know. And I'm not helping any. Apple has an announcement, but which they have not told anybody about, but which everybody has guessed will be September 12th. And that will be the new iPhone, which we don't know anything about, except we're guessing, and I'll tell you a little more about that later. Does that all make sense? No. All right. 8888 Ask Leo. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We talked last week a lot about the Apple-Samsung lawsuit, and of course Apple won that lawsuit, and Samsung's been fined $1 billion. The judge can come back and triple those damages. She will be hearing that case in a couple of months. And then, of course, Apple has asked that those infringing Samsung phones will be blocked from the U.S. And now, on Friday, they amended their complaint saying, hey, by the way, can you also block the Samsung Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note? It's getting on our nerves. Devices now that Apple doesn't like. Apple claims it is suffering. Oh, poor Apple, the most valuable company in the whole wide world is suffering. Oh, that's terrible. And will suffer irreparable harm from Samsung's violation of 8 utility patents, 4 that were in the Apple versus Samsung case, and another 4 they just threw in later. According to Apple, quote, Samsung has continued to flood the market with copycat products, continue to release new infringing products, including its current flagship device, the Galaxy S3, and it's killing us. People are buying it instead of our iPhone. How dare they? Maybe it's because it's like the iPhone is 3.5 inches and the Galaxy S3 is 4.5 inches. More than that, isn't it? 4.8 inches. Maybe it's because of that. Or maybe because, I don't know, better screen, different apps that maybe are maybe a little more capable, you know, seeing the weather right on the front page. Maybe it's just stuff that Apple's not doing and Samsung's doing. I don't understand. If people are buying the Samsung Galaxy S3 because it's a copy of the iPhone, why is it so different? I can understand. Look, the early Samsung phones looked just like iPhones. It was very obvious. Samsung made a decision. We can't. The iPhone's killing us, so let's copy it. And they did. But by the time we get to the Galaxy Note, which is 5.3 inches, and the Galaxy S3, which is 4.8 inches, there's no question these are different phones. It's thinner. It's lighter. It's prettier. So I think if there's any question now, maybe there wasn't some, you know, maybe you, if you interpreted Apple's suits charitably, as I did in the first place, they were defending themselves against copycats. That makes perfect sense. But now it's more like, oh, and by the way, these guys are just eating our lunch. And so we're going to put them out of business. Let's just, hey, judge, what is it they said? We're suffering irreparable harm. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you've got a question. Maybe you disagree with me. You want to defend Apple? It was a little defensible then, but not now. Mike in Maine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, you always solve my problems. I'm hoping you can do it now.
Help me, Obi-Wan. Yes, sir.
I got a TV that's new to me, and unfortunately, well, it's an LED. It's got a great picture, but compared to the old TV that was LCD, it's a little thinner. Mm-hmm. The sound isn't anywhere near as good. So I went out and I picked up a sound bar, and I got a very good one that was reviewed on home theater, and a Vizio VHT215, hooked it up. The sound was great, really improved it, but I noticed two little flaws, one of which I think I'm going to have with, and I had to return it, I'm going to have with any sound bar. It blocks the infrared remote to the Sony. And no matter where, what soundbar I get.
Wait a minute, you mean, so the Sony's infrared remote is like right on the front bezel and the soundbar physically gets in the way?
Physically gets in the way, and it's a 40-inch TV, and the soundbars are typically 40 inches long,
right,
and there's
right.
no way that I can think I'm going to find a soundbar that I'll be able to use and have it centered appropriately.
No, I think you're right, Mike, because it has to be a certain height, but the fault here lies not with the soundbar, or probably even with Sony. You've got to raise the TV up a little bit, maybe get a stand or something.
Well, I got it on a little desk, and it works great, and I have it on the Sony stand, and I guess maybe if I, put a block of wood or something underneath it, it'll work. But I'm wondering if you have this is anything else you might recommend that I can I can use.
There are IR extenders that might do this. So what it does, it's just an extension cord, kind of, I guess, for the infrared. Logitech has one. There are a number of companies that make these. That might be the best solution, which is, if you don't want to mount the TV any higher, which is, the obvious solution. They don't design the soundbar. They can't make it too short. It wouldn't have enough speaker size, right? I would say if the TV has an IR jack, you can get an IR extender that just kind of moves the IR somewhere else. The other thing you could do, the chat room suggests, and I think it's not a bad idea, is check and see if that TV has a app, as many do now, for the phone, for Android or iPhone. I control my stereo receiver, my Sonos, a lot of stuff, my Apple TV from the phone. And then you're using Wi-Fi instead of IR, which actually is better because you don't have to be line of sight to the TV. It's kind of an interesting problem. I go to monoprice.com. That's always a good place to find inexpensive things like IR extenders. Won't cost you too much. The other possibility, and this would work, is to mount the soundbar above the TV. Now, you have to mount it that way, but that should work equally well. Most soundbars say that you can put them at the top or the bottom, right? I'm not crazy, or just put the TV on a couple of dictionaries. I'm not crazy about soundbars, but they certainly save a lot of space, don't they? The idea of this soundbar is that in this one bar that's roughly the same size and shape as the actual speakers on your TV, right? Which, by the way, usually are pretty junky nowadays because most TV manufacturers figure, hey, they're going to put a home theater on this. It's an HD TV. Come on. So they don't put a lot of money into the speakers. So the soundbar is, in effect, a replacement for the existing TV speakers, but it has some fancy circuitry in it that's designed to give you surround sound through simulation, because you only have two, if you think about it, you only have two ears. And so in theory, it'd be possible to make surround sound by shaping the sound around you. And I think they do pretty well. They do pretty well. This is one problem with IR infrared remotes is that they're light. They're invisible light, but they're light, so they have to have line of sight from the remote control to the TV, and so there's some disadvantages to doing that. If you have a device and you put it in a cabinet, things like that might not work. I'll tell you what. Well, I'll ask Scott Wilkinson. He's coming up in a minute. Maybe he'll have a suggestion. Our home theater guru, Timothy, North Carolina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Timothy?
Doing great. I had a question about storage and collective. I'm a comic book artist, and I need to have files where multiple people can access them.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there was some kind of library system where when someone needed to color or work on a file, they could almost check it out from a central.
What a good idea. So the idea is you may be doing the inking, but then you'll have somebody doing the coloring, and so you need to have the same kind of work on the same file. Dropbox isn't ideal for that because it's synchronizing, huh? The best way to do it is the same way programmers do it with a versioning system. I'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, have I talked about Stamps.com lately? I love Stamps.com. Big Stamps.com fan. We use it here. I think we got two accounts because people kept stealing, and they've done it again, stealing my USB scale. So here's what Stamps.com is. It's very simple. It's an easy idea. You buy and print postage, U.S. postage. Sorry, this doesn't work in England or anywhere else you might be listening. unless you're in the U.S. But anywhere in the U.S., you buy U.S. postage online and you print it from your own computer. And you can print it right on the envelope. You could print, you know, you can actually buy like labels, Avery-style labels that are stamps, and you could print on the stamps. You can have your corporate logos on it and stuff. It'll print on any variety of things. And so here's the advantage of that. First of all, you always have exactly the right postage. When the rates change or whatever, it's automatic. And this scale, when you get this USB scale, always make sure you don't pay. You know, have you ever put extra stamps on something just to make sure it get there? You don't waste money doing that. You don't need a postage meter. You don't need any special ink or anything. Just a plain old computer and printer. This is really cool. Now, of course, there's a subscription fee, but if you do enough mailing, they waive that. And there are discounts. I think you get your money back no matter what. There are discounts. Like, I think it's up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail that you can't even get to the post office. In fact, you never have to go to the post office because a mail carrier will come and get the mail. Or you can schedule free pickups. So you just basically, this is it. It's, you know, say goodbye. And see, the U.S. Postal Service loves this. They want you to use it. So here's the deal. Visit stamps.com. We have a no-risk trial. Don't take the $80 offer, though. Click that radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and say, I heard it on The Tech Guy. Promo code Tech Guy, two words. And the $80 value is $110 value. You get $55 in free postage to use over a period of a few months. You get the digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling for that. It's $50 scale. It's $5 shipping and handling. To make that up, they give you a $5 supply kit. And, of course, the month trial free. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY to take advantage of our special deal.
Hey! Ugh. I've been trying to do it right.
I want to use Shazam on my own radio show. Can I? Does that work? You ever do that? You know, they have a smartphone app that you hear a song, then you hear it, and you run the program, and it listens for a while, and it tells you what it is? I don't even know how to do it on my own radio show. I could always ask Kyle. Kyle, what was that? I like that.
It sounds, the Lumineers.
The Lumineers. I like it. Anyway, Kyle does. He's our musical director. Which, Kyle, makes me think you're standing on a podium with a baton. And he he stands there and conducts our orchestra. But he puts a list together at the end of each show of all the songs he plays. So if you were sitting there going, I couldn't manage to get Shazam fired up in time, don't worry about it. We'll put it all up there for you. Kyle does it on his Google Plus page. Kyle, K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M, or simple, just go to our website. I haven't mentioned that today. We have a nice website. It's called techguylabs.com. All the show notes are there and everything. And at the end of the day, we'll have everything he plays. So we were talking to Timothy, North Carolina, and I'm going to get to Scott Wilkinson in a moment, but Timothy had a good question. How do I work with other people? He's a comic book artist. And as I remember, Timothy, you have inkers, right? They do the outline. I don't know if you have shaders. And then you have colorists, right, who color it in.
Right. Well, actually, it's basically just me and my brother that do it all. And so we're working within a home network.
Ah. Well, what I would suggest is what programmers use. They call it version management or versioning. What people don't know, you know, they use it so that if and this happens, of course, in programming, this is exactly what happens. You'll have, you know, 10 people on a team working on a program. And what they'll do is check it in, check it out. So they'll check out the latest updates. And when they make some changes, they'll check them back in, things like that. It works with text files, certainly, but you can also do it with binary files, with the graphics files. I was going to do a book with a co-author that way. I thought it was really a clever way to do it so that we could both work on the same version but not collide. That's the problem. You know, you make a change to a file, he makes a change to a file, then you got a problem. So my suggestion would be look at something called Git, G-I-T.
G-I-T.
Yeah. That's the most commonly used. It was written by Linus Torvalds, the Linux guy, for use in Linux. But it's now widely used for everybody. There are other ways to do this. Adobe, I'm told by Cold Fusion in our chat room, Adobe has something called Adobe Version Queue for designers. That's really designed around that. You could use Dropbox if you were careful. You know, you have a shared folder that you both share. That would be the easiest free thing to do. It's five. Well, so is Git, but it's 5 gigabytes. You put the document there. The problem is you can't both use it at the same time.
Right.
You'd have to work out a deal. You'd have to. Since you're in the same house, you go, "Hey, don't touch that." That would probably work. If you're on a network, if you're always on the same network, just sharing a folder would work. Share it on the network, and then you don't even need Dropbox. But if you ever wanted to leave the home network, is it always on the home network?
Yes, it is. And my computer is running very low on hard drive space.
Ah.
I didn't know if I could get something that would be my storage, but we could also use it.
Yeah. So get a network. So go out and get something called a network attached storage device, NAS. And it's attached to the network, but not attached to either computer. And it's a central repository, and you just store it there. You could use versioning with it, but you don't have to. I mean, the only thing versioning would do is make sure that you didn't overwrite each other's work.
Gotcha.
Pogo plug, another way to do that. I like Pogo plug.
Like that, or Drobo
would work. They have a NAS solution, you bet. It doesn't have to be that fancy. It could be just an inexpensive NAS solution.
All right.
Hey, that's cool. What's the name of your comic book?
We have a couple. The website is stripspore.com.
Say that again?
Stripspore.
Stripspore?
Like comic strips for everyone.
Ah, I get it. Stripspore. Got it. STRIPSFOR.com.
And our newest project is it's an all-ages book called Maps, which is about a kid traveling between dimensions. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. Appropriate for all ages?
Yes, sir.
Strips4.com. How cool. We'll put that in the show notes if people want to see it. Oh.
All right. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Timothy. You. Take care. All right. Now it's time for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. Scott joins us every week to talk about home theater. He is also the host of a fabulous show that happens to be on my network called Home Theater Geeks.
Absolutely.
Because he are one. So you heard our first call of the day, Guy. That's a funny problem.
I did, yeah.
It's what we call a first world problem. He has a big TV and a sound bar, and the sound bar blocks the remote control port on the TV. Now, you could raise the TV up.
You could.
Can you put a sound bar on the top?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any problem with that whatsoever. It can't be too far above the TV, but if you put it at the top of the TV. Now, of course, flat panel TVs these days are so thin, you can't just perch it up there
you'd have to mount it.
A CRT.
Yeah.
You'd have to do a mount. Right, yeah. Exactly. People in the chat room were saying something interesting and good, which was that some sound bars, such as the Yamaha YAS-101, have actually an IR repeater on the back of the sound bar.
That's what you want.
Which is exactly
it's like a pass through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your other idea about having an IR extender, putting an IR extender on there, plugging it into the back and having the IR little sensor somewhere outside of where the soundbar is another good idea. And Monoprice has them for cheap and other places too. I think putting the soundbar above is a more elegant solution. It's not really a problem in terms of directionality. You might want to aim it down slightly. But a lot of people put the center channel speaker in a true 5.1 above the screen.
Right.
I do, for example.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I'll have to try that.
My
center channel is so big that it's just the top bottom edge of the screen is a little bit blocked.
A little bit blocked. Yeah. So you just put it above. Now, if it's really heavy and really big, then that might be a problem.
You'd
but you just mount it securely
right.
and it'll
right.
be fine.
So what you got for us? Anything? What do you want to talk about today? I'll let you choose the agenda.
Why, thank you so very much. somebody else in the chat room mentioned next week is the big Cedia trade show.
Oh, yeah. Every year you cover that for us, which is great.
I do. And this year, somebody posted in the chat room about Sony introducing a new 84-inch 4K flat panel. So the trend towards 4K is on its way. Here we come.
I am so excited. I am so excited. How big is it?
84 inches.
How much is it?
The CNET review or preview didn't really say, but the European version is on the order of $30,000.
Yeah, okay. And 4K, what is that? Explain what that is.
Sure. It's actually four times the resolution of high definition.
Wow.
So it's... Oh, well, there's the music.
He hears the music. Hang on. We'll talk more with Scott Wilkinson and his $30,000 TV. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm so glad we have this time together. Just to have a dance and sing a song. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we return to the fabulous Carol Burnett Show, starring Scott Wilkinson as the home theater geek.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, Scott.
Hey,
brought
Leo.
To you by... So, welcome back to the Tech Guy Show. As always, on the Tech Guy Show at this time, we like to talk to our home theater guru, Mr. Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks, which will air on Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on twit.tv. That's the website, and you can get it after the fact, too. Who's your guest on Monday?
Well, actually, this Monday's Labor Day, so...
Oh, forget it.
We are dark.
Go dark, my friend.
But next week, we're going to do...
You have a nice boss.
Yes, I do have a very nice boss. Thank you so very much.
Gives you the day off.
Yes.
Next week,
we're going to do a Cydia roundup.
That's how you started talking. So Cydia, which is the Custom Electronic Design and Installation Association, is
you got it exactly right.
Well, I'm looking at the website. I confess that I cheated. Is the trade show for home theater installers?
Correct. Custom installers.
However, TV companies use this as a chance to announce stuff.
Right. Exactly right. It's sort of the second CES. CES is the most important show of the year for me. Cydia is almost as important. It's more for higher end stuff, you know, because it's custom installers who are buying the stuff and rich people who are buying the stuff. There's a lot more projector announcements at Cydia than there are at CES.
Right.
But as we were talking about before, Sony apparently is going to be introducing an 84-inch flat panel with 4K resolution. And in the chat room, and you asked me before the break, what does this 4K mean? It means that there are roughly 4,000 pixels across by 2,000 pixels up and down. Whereas normal HD is 1,920 pixels across by about 1,080 to be exact, pixels up and down. So it's twice the horizontal resolution and twice the vertical resolution, giving you four times as many pixels, or about 8 million pixels, 8.8 million pixels on the screen. Now, for that to be effective, you and I have talked about it before, the screen needs to be pretty big or you need to sit really close.
Right.
Or else your eye can't really discern the difference, except that I think it can. There are a lot of people, a lot of journalists in my business who say, 4K, you don't need it. Even when you go to the movies and you see a digital cinema and the screen is 20 feet wide, they're still showing you essentially HD. It's 2K. It's 20,000.
Scott and 4K. I at CES went around to all the people who had 4K displays, and some of them were small.
Yeah.
And we could see the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I remember 2 years ago, you and I went to the Red booth and saw a 4K movie.
Yep.
Looked great.
Looked great.
You could see the hairs on people. Not that you'd want to, but you could see the hairs on people's arms.
That's right. Now, in the early days of HD, newscasters were afraid because they, you know, oh my God, they're going to see every wrinkle.
Well, now they shave their arms,
right?
Or something.
And now, if we ever get 4K, see, the problem with 4K is that there isn't any content, and so all these TVs and displays that are 4K can do is upconvert.
Right.
But
get ready. And you know what this is, you know what's going to drive this is The Hobbit. Because Peter Jackson is shooting this. I think he's shooting it with red cameras, which are either 4 or 5K.
They're actually 5K, but it'll be converted down to 4.
So you will be able to get will it be Blu-ray, or you're going to have a new format?
That's the problem. How is that 4K content going to be
a hard drive?
or a thumb drive.
Oh, maybe.
You could. Now, Red introduced a 4K hard disk server, essentially, for its 4K projector, and it said it was going to be able, you were going to be able to load 4K content onto that thing just using like an SD card, a super high capacity SD card, but nonetheless, essentially a little memory stick. Load that thing on there. So it could be that you could buy that. You go to the store instead of cheap.
How big would it have to be if it's let's see, 8K is it 8 times HD, the number of pixels?
Well, 4K is 4 times HD.
4 times HD. So if an HD movie fits on a 9 gigabyte DVD or Blu-ray DVD,
Blu-ray is 25 or 50 gigabytes.
Oh, my. Okay. So we'd need 200 gigabytes.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a while.
We don't have thumb drives that are that.
It's going to be a while.
Yeah. How long is it going to be, really? I mean, the curve of technological innovation of increased storage is exponential. It's going up very fast. Right. You can buy terabyte drives now for what? Under $100.
Well, and I have a 64 gigabyte USB key that was $50. So,
I think we're close.
I think we're close.
We are.
And I like the idea of getting my movies on a giant USB key.
Wouldn't that be great?
Well, it'd be faster. I just think it'd be better.
Yeah.
Or a little hard drive, although that's a little bulky.
It is a little bulky. Now, I think putting it on a memory stick and then sticking it into a device that transfers it to a hard drive so that you have a backup, for one thing, might be one way to go. As long as the memory stick has a fast enough bandwidth that can deliver data quickly enough.
Oh, yeah, we're getting there. And they'll be small. I mean, people are saying, oh, I don't want, thumb drives are big because they put a big container around it. In fact, it could be fairly small, like a chip. So that's interesting. Movies on a chip.
It's like press releases, press kits on thumb drives. Sometimes they're big, and sometimes they're so small, I lose them.
Oh, I have little chip. Yeah, I had one. There's one called the Tough and Tiny that's made by, is it SanDisk? One of the companies. And they're so small, it fits on your keychain. And there's no reason that couldn't be 256 gigs. Wow.
Yeah, exactly right.
Wow. I like this. I like it. I bet you, the movie industry will come up with some new format that will be completely incompatible with everything we have because they'll want new piracy protections.
Right. Well, this brings up the whole question that you and I have talked about before about physical media versus downloading.
But see, downloading is barely good enough for HD. Forget 4K.
Right, exactly. This is my point and why I think physical media is going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
Verbatim, downloading is... What's that?
Verbatim makes the Tough and Tiny. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Good. I think physical media is going to be around for a while, at least for those of us who prefer quality over convenience. Now, you can compress the you-know-what out of a video stream, even 4K, and deliver that by a download or streaming with current bandwidth, but it's not going to look very good.
Right. I'm excited. So this is a harbinger. The fact that Sony is making this TV and showing it in sufficient quantity to sell it means that other companies will, and the prices will drop. The first HD TVs, the first plasmas, were $30,000. So this is not a big deal.
That's right. And they were 40 inches.
Right.
And this is $30,000 for 84
inches.
LG also has a 84-inch, I think it's a 4K as well. Another interesting point about the Sony is that it's the first Sony to use passive 3D glasses. It's 3D, of course. But it's using the passive glasses rather than the active glasses that Sony has used in all their 3D TVs up till now.
Actually, we have 3D to thank for the I hate 3D, as everybody knows, because I don't stop saying this all over and over. It's a stupid gimmick, but we have 3D to thank for the fact that these 4K panels are emerging because they're making 4K panels so that you get 3D in high def.
Yes,
you need two high def screens in effect to do 3D in high def.
Correct. Yep, exactly right. Current high def 3D in passive glasses only gives you 540 lines per eye. Now, the brain fuses those together, so we do see more detail than you might expect from that, but it's still a bit of a problem. Now, when you put a 3D like that on a 4K display, you're getting full 1080 lines in each eye, so you're seeing true full high def with passive glasses. and not those big, bulky, expensive active shutter glasses. So this is a really good thing, I think. And the reason, and I agree with you 100%, that's why we're getting 4K now.
Right. And so that's I'll really put up with 3D just so that we get 4K, because that's what I want. And actually, you know what? I'm worried. I have a feeling that we're going to skip 4K and go right to 8K, because as you said, they were showing the Olympics at 8K, almost 8K.
That's right. In Japan and in certain venues in England, they were showing.
One of our chatters said he tried to go see it in England, and the line was 3 miles long.
Oh, my God. Really?
Well, everybody wants to see this.
Yeah.
Everybody should be seeing Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks on twit.tv every Monday, except this Monday, at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Take care. And by the way, you can get a 256-gig thumb drive right now. It's only $500. Nothing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo, that's the phone number. If you've got a question, if there's something you'd like to know more about, 8888, ask Leo, converts to 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere inside the U.S. Outside the U.S., no problem. You just use Skype out. It's free to a toll-free number. Mark's patiently hanging on. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I got a probably an interesting one for you here. I was cleaning out my storage shed, and I like to dumpster dip every now and then. And there was a couple of boxes, and I was going through some papers and stuff that was in one. Well, at the bottom of it, there was a laptop. I said, nah, they threw it out because it doesn't work or something. And besides, there's no power cord. Well, I flipped over a few more papers, and there was the power cord and everything. I said, oh, what the hell? I'll take it home. It's a Dell Inspiron 2200. Okay. And, lo and behold, the battery doesn't work. I guess that's what the blinking yellow light is in the front.
And that they probably just assume because the battery no longer charges that the thing is broken, but it's not.
Yeah, so, you know, I can get online and everything, but my wife uses AOL a lot, and I know she's probably gobbling up cookies. It's just gotten slower and slower.
Yeah.
So I went into, what they have, the scheduled tasks after, you know, going to the Microsoft website, and I tried to put in, you know, just check some stuff or move the time slots around, but the old user's name comes up, and then it says,
wow.
You may need a password. And I'm going, oh, great. And then after I went ahead without the password, it said, well, it may or may not change this date and time. So my question is, how the hell do I get it to recognize me now since I found it in the dumpster? And
well, your best bet, and I would recommend this before you really start using it seriously, is to, if you can find a Windows XP disk lying around, is to format it and start over, because you don't know what's on there. It could be viruses on there. It could be a keystroke loggers. It's safest to start over. Now, this computer is pretty old. It's about 7 years old. Doesn't have a very powerful processor. It's a Pentium M. It's got a only 512 megs of memory in it. So you're not this, and it's not a huge drive either. It's 40 gig drive. So my suggestion, and I think this would be a perfect candidate for putting Linux on there. You know what Linux is?
I've heard of it.
I mean, why spend any money on this freebie?
But like I said, and the main reason we're using it, about 2 weeks after I found it, my regular computer, I've got a older Dell Dimension C521. One day I turned it on, and you know how it's got the Windows Vista on it, and you know how you hear the music when it comes on and all that.
Yeah.
Nothing came on the screen, Uh-oh. And the thing's running. But there's no picture, and I changed the screen over to another one. It wasn't the screen. I'm going, that's great. I got a computer now that turns on, and I can't, you know. And I was just getting ready to get Carbonite to back up everything that next week.
Oops.
And I was like, I got screwed again. So that's my.
Hey, here's a good Linux. This is designed for older computers, which this is. You know, if you used Ubuntu, which is what everybody uses nowadays, ubuntu.com, it's really designed for more modern PCs. This is old enough. But Puppy Linux, puppylinux.org, Puppy Linux, PuppyLinux.org, is designed for older, slower systems. You can download it for free, put it on a USB key or a CD, and then boot to it in this the Dell, and then just, I would format the drive, repartition it, format it, overwrite it. You don't want anything that's on there because it's somebody else's stuff. Could be somebody else's viruses. And just for, to give the person some privacy, just overwrite it with the Linux. It's very Windows-like. You're going to feel fairly comfortable with it. You can browse. You can't run AOL on it. I mean, if you really need to run AOL, I mean, that might be a problem. But it will run pretty fast and snappy. It will not bog down. You can go to AOL on the web, of course, and still get your AOL email, things like that. So I think this is the best idea. Now, Utah Roger is saying that if you could find somebody with the proper Dell recovery disks for a 2200, or you called Dell and you talked them into sending you those, and I think they do that for a nominal price, you could recover it with all the proper drivers, and it would then be very much like it was, you know, when it came home from the factory in 2005. The problem with a 2005 computer is if you're trying to do 2012 stuff on it, you might find it's a little slow. I like the idea of putting putting Linux on an older computer and turning it into kind of an internet box, you know, just designed to run internet stuff. We have actually, I'll give myself a little plug, at TWIT.TV, that's our podcast network, TWIT, short for This Week in Tech, .TV/KH. We have a show called Know How. And one of the shows we did was pretty much exactly what I'm suggesting, which is putting Puppy Linux on an old Dell laptop. It's from August 12th. It's number 5, Resurrect an Old PC with Linux. So if you want a little hand-holding, we walk you through it in a video you can look at twit.tv/KH. And that'll make it a little... It's not a hard thing to do. It won't take you too much time. And the nice thing is, you know, why put extra money in? You know, you don't know how this is going to turn out. So don't spend money on another version of Linux when you could just put something free on it. It's one of the nice things, or of Windows, when you can put something free on it like Linux. Frank in Texas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
My question is I want to reformat my C drive, but I wasn't sure if that would also erase my D drive partition, which is the recovery partition on my...
No, it won't. I mean, be careful how you do it, but if you just... you'll lose Windows, you'll have to start over, but you will have that recovery partition.
Okay, so if I reformat it, could I still do a factory restore through D partition?
But don't reformat before you do that. Do the factory restore, because that will format it for you, and then you'll be sure that it's all running.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, just do the restore now, and as part of the restore, you can format C and start from scratch. That's the best way to do it.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, that way you're guaranteeing A, that the recovery partition will run. You know, you don't want to erase your Windows unless you know you're going to be able to get out of that.
Right, that's what I was worried about.
All right, and do you see when you boot up, you know, Control R to recover or something like that?
Yeah. I think it's F8 on mine or
F8 to recover. Yeah. So that's good. Some computers you have to make disks from the recovery partition and boot from them. Some you can recover straight from the recovery partition. You know, Apple does something really cool. I have one of the newer MacBooks, the Retina display MacBook, and I wanted to put a bigger hard drive into it. So I did. And I also wanted to test out something Apple does. Now, Apple does the same thing now that most PC manufacturers have done for years. They have a hidden section called a partition of the hard drive that has the operating system on it. So if you damage the operating system, you can reinstall it from this hidden partition. It's really simple. When you're booting up, you press and hold Command R, and that'll run it. But what if your whole, you know, what if your hard drive got munged up, and or you do what I did, which you put it in a new, brand new hard drive, you've got no recovery partition. This is slick. You still press and hold Command R, and then the Mac says, "Hey, I don't have any. There's nothing on this drive. Would you like to do a network recovery?" And I would love to see Windows machines do this. And you say yes, you give it the Wi-Fi information. It downloads and installs the operating system from the network, from the internet. That was very nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, real quickly, because I know there's new phones coming out. You know there's new phones coming out. Maybe you're looking at some of these gadgets. Here's the problem. You know, there'll be a new iPhone September 12th. But, of course, as soon as they announce it, your old iPhone's going to plummet in value, right? So here's what you do. Go to gazelle.com right now and get a 30-day quote. They guarantee their quotes for 30 days. This is kind of sneaky. But I would suggest doing this before the new iPhone comes out, or say the new, maybe you want a new Nokia phone. They'll take cell phones, Samsung, HTC, BlackBerry, RIM, Nokia, Motorola. But let's say, oh, you know, I have a 4S, and I'm really curious about this iPhone 5. But what you do now is get the quote now, okay? So iPhone 4S, it's on AT&T in my case. I think I have a 32 gig. $280. So that they're offering you. Now, that is locked in for 30 days at gazelle.com. And they pay the shipping on any gadget worth more than a buck. So you see this button, you add it to a box. The idea is you get a box, you throw all your old gadgets in there, you get quotes for all of them. They mail you a mailing label, you put it on there, slap it on there. They get it, they erase the data for you, you don't have to worry about that. And then they send you a check or a PayPal, or, and this would be my suggestion, get the Amazon gift card because they bump it up another 5%. So that's another $14 on that offer right there. Just $294 just for using the Amazon. Now that pays for the new phone, right? You gotta love that. So just give it a try. GAZELLE.com. This is the gadget season, and there's lots of new gadgets. You got an iPhone, a cell phone, an iPad, an iPod, a MacBook, or a Mac. You can get an offer from Gazelle. Good for 30 days. They even buy broken phones. So my son breaks his phones regularly, so I just Gazelle them. I just Gazelle them. You know, it's not as much for a broken phone, but they're pretty good. Gazelle.com, GAZELLE.com. The best way to recycle your new and old gadgets so you can get the new stuff. And do get that 30-day quote now, because the price ain't going up. Pretty sure of that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. It's Bob in Pennsylvania next. Hello, Bob.
Hello there.
Hey.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Hey, it's not much of a call-in show if nobody calls it, so thank you.
Whatever's customary.
No need to thank me. Thank you.
Okay. Well, in any event, I got a Trojan when I was downloading software from one of the popular software sites of excellent reputation.
Really? Oh, that's not good.
Well, one with four initials to its name that everybody loves. Anyway.
CNET?
Yeah, I was downloading a browser update.
Wow. Sometimes it's hard to know where you got the thing. CNET scans their files before they offer them for download.
Certainly. That's why I hesitated to mention.
Yeah, no, I would not impugn them. It's hard to tell where it came from. Let's just say you got one.
Yeah. And my MBAM, CCleaner, my Avast was the only one that identified it.
Okay. And what did it call it? Do you remember?
I can't recall.
Yeah. And it said it was a Trojan. It wasn't a tracking cookie or something like that. It was a Trojan horse or a browser.
Specific about Trojan.
They said Trojan. Well, that's not good.
In any event, the way what has happened since is I've reloaded my operating system three times. And it finally has come up clean, I think, but Avast keeps...
Okay, now I'm suspecting Avast.
I'm wondering about that myself.
You know, there is such a thing as a false positive. In fact, it's very common in viruses.
Every 26 seconds, I get a notification of one of three different files.
Here's what I'm going to suggest. If you don't, you know, the Avast is a free antivirus, and I have to say, mostly free does not mean good. The one, if you're going to use a free antivirus, get it from Microsoft. The Security Essentials, at least it's from Microsoft, and it's reliable, and they work very hard and spend a lot of money to keep it up to date and so forth. So I would take Avast off. You have to remove it first. Go to Microsoft.com/Security Essentials and install that.
I was contemplating that myself.
Yeah, but, it's going to be in Windows 8. They're going to rename it. It's going to be changed a little bit. But that's gonna, from going forward, Windows will always have an antivirus, which I think is very good news for users. Not such good news for antivirus companies, but I'm sure they'll find some other way to make money.
The issue at hand now, though, is it won't let me back up.
Yeah,
it doesn't CD, and I have no way of knowing how to let it CD. If I go to my USB, which is what I, the way I used to do it was daily onto D and then weekly onto a separate hard drive.
Is D a partition?
Yes.
Okay. And you can see other partitions, right?
Well, I think that's the only one I've got.
Okay. Or you can see other external drives, though.
Yeah, I can see my external drive, but it won't show me where I had been backing up before.
Maybe in the reinstall of Windows, something went wrong.
This is where my head's at this point. Do you think it's worthwhile to go for a fourth one?
A fourth reinstall? Not yet. Here's what I'm going to do, because I think you got a false positive is what I think. It is possible, by the way, there are really nasty viruses that can survive a reinstall of Windows. They'll sit on the master boot record, or maybe they'll have been smart enough to put themselves, you know, somewhere that is non-volatile.
One of the reasons I like Avast, because it always does a boot scan every time you boot up.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Avast. So here's what I would suggest. You, if you've been doing Windows Update regularly, have you?
I have at this point.
You're up to date now, aren't you? So Microsoft pushes out, it's not well known, but it pushes out, it's only well known if you listen to me, because I talk about it a lot, something called a malicious software removal tool every second Tuesday.
To download that and
you don't have to download it. You have it.
I've tried to play with it, and I just haven't been successful.
Yeah, so click Start, and then in the Run command, and if you don't have a Run command, you can change your Start menu to expose that. You should always have the Run command turned on. It's very useful. But in the Start menu, there should be a Run dot, dot, dot. Click that.
No.
There's not? Okay, well, you can right-click on the Start menu and turn it on. It's a customization. The program you want to run is mrt.exe.
I'm sorry?
MRT. You can also do Windows key R. That will also start the Run command. Okay, and then type MRT and hit Return. What that does is it runs, you know, it's fun. I really think Microsoft should probably tell people about this. It runs this program. It's on your system. It just doesn't have a menu item in the Start menu for some reason. And here's another thing. Even though they update it every second Tuesday, they don't run a thorough scan. They just run a quick scan. So what you want to do is run a thorough scan. And this it's not an antivirus exactly. It's a malicious software removal tool. But it knows about the most common kinds of problems. And if it doesn't see anything, I think, you know, you could get a second opinion. Go to ESET.com. They have an online scanner, ESET.com. They're our sponsor, by the way. But there are a lot of companies that have online scanners. This one I happen to use and like. ESET.com. And then run the online scanner. And if it comes up negative, that you don't have a virus, Avast is giving you a false positive. Not at all unusual. Not at all unusual. If one of those two tools detects a virus, then you're somehow that Trojan is replicating itself. Now, sometimes this is a matter of definition. Sometimes it's not a Trojan; it's a browser helper object or a toolbar, something that CNET put on there, maybe that One antivirus company says is malware, and another one says is not. Malware is in the mind of the beholder. So I would say try those two things. MRT, just click, you know, the Windows key and R. That'll launch that run box and type in that run box, MRT, hit return, then do a thorough scan. A window will pop up and it'll ask you what you want. You say thorough scan. If nothing shows up there, then go to eset.com. On the front page there, you'll find online scanner. Run that. Nothing shows up there, you're good. Get rid of Avast. If you don't want to pay a penny, go to get Microsoft Security Essentials. I think you should try ESET, but that's I'll save that for the ad. It's a commercial antivirus, but it's the one I use and recommend. I think you're probably all right. I think this is a false positive, Bob. Not unusual. Not unusual. And you know, other even ESET and Microsoft Security Essentials get false positives from time to time. It's unavoidable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's hot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question or a comment or a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Eric is in the chat room. You're in IT. So he has a good he's not in the chat room. He's sitting right across from me. He's also in the chat room, but he's also sitting right across from me. He's also tweeting. So he's like, I don't know what you're doing, how you're doing all that, but you know, he's amazing. He's a multitasker. But he suggested, as many in the chat room have, something called Windows Defender. This is kind of cool. Microsoft makes this available. It's the thing to do with this is do it now, though, before you get a bug. If you Google Microsoft Windows Defender, you'll find it on Microsoft's Download Center. Safe to get it from there. And what it does is you make a USB key, a bootable device. You could, I presume you could make a CD as well if you wanted, but I think a USB key would be easier and faster. And you put it on there. And the reason this works a little better than an online scanner is because you boot to it. You reboot the machine. So nothing is, no bad guys running when you reboot the machine. And then Windows Defender really has a full, you know, full capability of scanning the whole hard drive, looking for bad stuff. The other advantage of this is it automatically updates when you first boot from it. So it checks to see what's going on out there. Is there anything new? It does focus on spyware, which, you know, is kind of, that's what Defender has always been traditionally. But I think it would discover a Trojan. It's Microsoft's funny. They don't want to really compete with their vendors, the software developers. So they've been very nervous about getting into the antivirus business. And yet, it's really true that the operating system manufacturer is the best person to protect you, right? Because they know the internals, they can really do a good job. It should be, frankly, built into the operating system. So this is an example of where Microsoft's kind of hereditary reluctance to hurt developers has hurt us. And they're slowly changing. Windows 8 will have an antivirus built in. I think they wanted to give kind of enough time for the antivirus companies to rethink their business model before they said, all right, we'll take it from here, guys. we'll handle it now. But it really is the right way. And since really, you know, Microsoft is one that got us into this problem in the first place, because most of these viruses take advantage of mistakes Microsoft made in the operating system, programmer mistakes, they really ought to be the ones to fix it, shouldn't they? So there's another great solution, Microsoft's Windows Defender. It's probably, you know, while it's easier to put on a USB key, there would be a reason to put it on a CD or a DVD because they can't be modified after the fact. So but now you know you've really got a clean version. The problem with a USB key is if a malware author were really sneaky, he might be able to modify that. So putting on what we call, you know, write-only media, like a CD or a DVD, probably be the safest thing to do. But the thing to do is do it now before you get infected. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Michael is in Chicago. Hey, Michael, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Hi. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
Watched you on Tech TV and all.
Oh, wow. Very long time. Like years.
Years, yes.
Tech TV, I kind of, even cringe when I say this myself, but Tech TV has been off the air for 8 years now.
Ooh.
Wow. Wow. I'm feeling kind of old. What can I do for you?
Well, my question is, I have the wonderful Galaxy S3 on Verizon.
Love it.
And I would love to use my phone for everything that it was shipped with from Samsung, including the NFC chip using Google Wallet, without jailbreaking my phone. However, Verizon does not allow it, or something's going on.
No, it's Google. It's Google. So the Google Wallet doesn't work with the Galaxy S3, period. It doesn't support that phone. I don't know why. I'm sure it will, but for right now, it doesn't. Because I have a Galaxy S3 that is unlocked, that is not attached to any carrier, and it doesn't work on it either. Now, NFC does. Is your NFC not working?
Yes, my NFC works fine.
Okay, yeah, so it's just the Google Wallet. Yeah, I get the same message. It says, sorry, wallet doesn't work on the Galaxy S3. And so I don't think it's Samsung. I think it's Google. Now, there are perhaps ways around it if you really want to use it. For instance, according to XDA developers, which is the ultimate source of hacking, Android hacking, this is a post from last year. You can easily install Google Wallet onto Galaxy Nexus with an APK. See, it's ironic. The Galaxy Nexus apparently also, which is Google's own phone, apparently does not work with Google Wallet. It says Google Wallet isn't available for devices with an NFC chip. That's just, I would say, wait. Because I think, that's the whole point of Google Wallet, isn't it? After all, they've just amended it so you could put any credit card. When it first came out, one credit card only. I think it was Citibank, somebody's credit card. And then they've just recently amended it so you can put any of your credit cards in there. I would expect in the next soon, week or so, month or so, whatever, Google will put out a new version of Wallet that works great with NFC. And now we got something. Of course, you need to get vendors to have NFC pay points. And then you could just tap your phone to it and pay. What would happen, by the way, is the NFC, which is it stands for Near Field Communications. In the Galaxy S3, it's actually in the battery. So there's a little radio, basically, in the battery. And if it needs to get, it's within a certain distance, just a few inches, of a passive NFC chip. The radio, believe it or not, powers the chip. And the chip sends information back into the phone. Then the phone interacts with it. So, for instance, we have an NFC chip here in the lobby of the Tech Guy Labs. And if you tap an NFC-enabled phone against it, it will launch Foursquare and check you in. It says, hey, you're here. That's just an example. But, of course, it could have information about a merchant. It could have information about a purchase. If you go to McDonald's, they have that PayPoint thing. Same idea. You'll tap your thing. I don't know what it is at McDonald's. You tap your thing against, I don't know what it is. Is there a special card, something? And it goes, it's a special card. And then you have to, now this is the key, on the phone you'll have to enter a PIN. So it's just not, it's not like instant, but you'll enter a PIN. Of course you want that. That's for security. And then you're saying, yes, I authorize that charge. So we can't do it yet, I guess, because Google, for some reason, probably because they're waiting, I don't know, till more people have NFC, I don't know, doesn't let you do it. Not
right.
Not something wrong. No, it's not Verizon. This one, you know, normally you're right to blame Verizon. In this case, it's not Verizon's fault.
All right, thanks, Leo.
Hey, thanks, Michael. You like the S3?
Yes, I love it. I finally found an Android phone that I do not want to smash against the wall.
Yeah, well, I think to some degree it is a great hardware design from Samsung, but to some degree it's because Google finally has got Android really polished and. In this case, it's running Ice Cream Sandwich, ICS, but the next version, Jelly Bean, is even better. And I understand that our S3s will get updated pretty soon, that they're gonna push out an update to Jelly Bean very soon, and I think you'll be very happy with it. This is where Apple is really, I believe, is really threatened. and maybe why they're trying to block these phones in the U.S. They've asked the judge to block Galaxy S3s, the top-of-the-line Google phone right now from Samsung. They're asked to block them on patent violations. And I have to say there's a real threat to Apple here because these phones are faster. They're LTE, so if you're Verizon, you're using the 4G network, can't do that on an iPhone. Bigger screens, better screens, great software. They've caught up. Android has absolutely caught up, and I think it's terrifying Apple. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thereupon the credit card comes out.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How long before paper money and credit cards are obsolete? We've seen this happen so fast in other areas. I mean, when's the last time you went inside a bank? Until ATM machines, that's how you got money. You'd go into the bank, you'd sign a piece of paper, and somebody would give you, go 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80. Now you just go to a machine. In fact, many banks are charging you if you dare go inside. Or you want to speak to a human, that's going to cost you. These things change so rapidly. And I think that it's going to be in the next 10 years that cash and even credit cards are just going to go away. And it'll all be in your phone. It'll all be in your phone. And the funny thing is, we get used to this rate of change very quickly. And look what happened with when I was a young man even. The Wizard of Oz was on at Thanksgiving, and you could watch it once a year on Thanksgiving, and that's it. Then VCRs came out. You could own it. You could watch it anytime you wanted. Then DVDs came out. Now they're obsolete. Now Blu-rays are out, and how long before they're obsolete? Yeah, the Dr. Mom, right? Danny Kaye would host it, and he'd have to warn everybody. At the beginning of every broadcast, Danny Kaye would say, now here's a warning. It starts out in black and white and then goes into color. That's normal. Debug One in the chat room says there's a nice tactile feel to cash. There is, but there's also a problem. Cash is laden. Maybe I shouldn't say this because it's going to freak people out. It's laden with germs. It is actually disgusting. And I guarantee you, once cash is gone, people will go, ooh, what were they thinking? Pieces of paper that would be handled by thousands of people, one after the other. Ugh. Chai in West LA. Is that how I say it? Hi, Chai. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I have a privacy question. My husband installed a wire-free video monitoring system so that we can watch our little dogs while we're at work.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's kind of cute. Anyway, I was just wondering, is there any way that someone could hack into it and someone else could be watching the dogs other than my husband and me?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It depends on how well protected that particular system is. This happened a few months ago. A very well-known camera system was hacked, and people could easily do a Google search for a certain term that was the website that you, the quote, private website that you go to see your camera, and you could see people all over the place. I mean, so whose camera did you buy?
It's in Victor Upton Edward.
V-U-E. Oh, ViewZone. Yeah, those are good. That's actually a sponsor of ours in L.A. No, those ViewZones, are fine.
So that it's pretty safe, you think?
Yeah. So what you want to do is watch for hacks. Because,
and how would I do that?
Well, every once in a while, Google ViewZone and hack.
Oh, okay.
But right now, they are private. It really depends on how well implemented the encryption and so forth is.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a reasonable thing. I wouldn't prance around naked in front of it. But if it's just your dogs, I mean, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, no. But I mean, you know, I'm home sometimes during the day, and we'll be talking, and it'll say, "Oh, I see you." So I'm just kind of going, "Whoa."
Yeah, yeah.
I hope it's just you that is
seeing
me.
anytime there's a camera on, there's a little bit of a risk, isn't there?
Yeah.
I know people, very intelligent, not paranoid people, who tape over the cameras on their laptops.
Yeah.
Because in theory, same problem. It's possible to hack a laptop in such a way that the camera comes on and you don't know it.
Right, Right.
Okay, we're going to have to all get used to this notion that there's cameras everywhere. Oy, oy, oy.
I know, it's a little strange. But
to my knowledge, the view zones are safe. Those are nice because there's no, it's battery powered. There's no wires at all.
None. Zero. And you can barely even see the little camera. And, I mean, you can look at it on your iPhone or your computer. And
the advantage of that is, unlike, there's different kinds of cameras. This one, the view zone only turns on, and this is how they keep the battery use way down, only turns on when you access it.
Oh.
So it's not on all the time. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a little better.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you for your help.
Sure,
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. And, you know, there's two things possible. One, we're going to learn not to dance around naked in front of our computer. Or the other possibility is it'll be, well, so what? Everybody does. it won't have the... no, probably the first. Yeah. Yeah. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm telling you, these things change very fast. Mores, everything. It all changes before you even know it. Jan is next in Los Angeles. Hi, Jan.
Well, hi, Leo. What a pleasure to talk with you. I just love your show. It's entertaining and informative, so thanks for what you give us.
Well, that's because I'm dancing around naked right now. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. That would neither be entertaining nor informative.
I think it'd be adorable.
Well, you know, I joke, but the air conditioning has failed in the studio, and I have kind of stripped down to my skivvies, if you can handle that image in your mind.
Ooh!
Ooh! It's a little warm in here.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you, Leo, but I'm happy for the rest of us.
Jan, you crack me up. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've been needing to call you all week. By accident, a pop-up came up on my screen. I normally use Firefox to launch my internet.
Yeah.
Little pop-up thing came up, and I thought I was hitting the exit out to close it, and instead it installed something that says search.fantasticgames.com.
Oh, how annoying. Ugh.
And I can't seem to get it off no matter what I do, Leo.
I hate it when people do that. Not you. I mean, it's of course this is what they count on, is that people don't read these pop-ups and just say, okay.
No, I thought I was closing it out, but instead it installed it, and now my computer runs slow. I lost all my history. It's just so frustrating, and I don't know how to revert back to my Firefox launcher.
So you're saying now when you launch Firefox, this thing comes up?
Yes, and what it says in the URL bar is search.fantasticgames.com/455, and there's a meta crawler, and it just, what happens is it pulls up all these advertisers.
I hate that. So I'm not sure if it merely changed your homepage. It might be something that simple.
Okay, so how do I get
So you go into your settings in Firefox, and the very first page, it says what your homepage is. And if your homepage is Fantastic Games, you're done. You could just change it back to whatever you want, you know, Google.com or whatever. If it's more than that, hang on, and I'll talk a little bit about what you can do when we come back from the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we're talking computers, the internet, cell phones, any home theater, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. That's the number Jan called because she clicked OK a little too quickly and got something called Fantastic Games stuck in her machine.
Yes.
So this is not uncommon. I'm not the Fantastic Games one, but this whole thing of basically hijacking your browser. And, of course, why do they do it? Because every time they pop up that ad or show you that site, they get a penny or two. And if they can infect millions of machines, it's good money. So the question is, how do we get rid of it? Yeah, that's the question. What do I do? So there are a number of different things you can do to get rid of it. The first thing I suggested is just to see if it might have been, if you're lucky, as benign as just changing your home page, your start page in your browser. But usually it's... Go ahead.
Yeah, so how do I do that? Because I thought I tried to do that, and it keeps reverting back to that.
Yeah, so that's right. So even though you change it, it goes back. Okay, that means they put some other stuff on there, too. It's as simple as probably a little program that runs every time you run Firefox and changes the browser. So
Yes. What
we would like to do is get rid of that because we don't know what else it might be doing.
Okay.
So a couple of I'm going to give you a couple of different things you can do. And I'm going to have to put an article on the website. I think I'll make it my tip of the week. We have on the new Tech Guy Lab site a tip every week. This would be a good one. So, Josh, help me out here. We'll write this up. So what should you do if something bad gets on your system? Now, I always say, and I think this is really important to underscore, if you really get a virus infection, something really nasty gets on your system, the best thing to do, and every security expert will tell you this, is to just format the drive and start over. Because the problem is the steps I'm going to tell you might get rid of the presenting problem, but might completely miss three or four secret things that the bad guy's also done to you. And when there's different things bad guys can do. They're doing one that's obvious because they need to, because that's how they're going to make a little money. You see that page, you're going to know what's happening. But what if they, for instance, put a Trojan horse keystroke logger on there? That runs silently in the background, monitors your keystrokes, looks for passwords, things like that, and then periodically phones home. That would be bad. Or what if they put a little program on there that takes your machine and uses it for zombie attacks and spam sending, things like that. And again, if they did that, there's lots of money to be made, but it's very important to them that you not detect it. So they do that all behind the scenes. So there are things malware can do to your system that have no symptoms if it's designed properly. And those are the ones you really want to worry about. Having your start page messed up is annoying, but doesn't have any long-term consequence. So that's why experts will always say, and I always say, the safest thing to do is format and reinstall. But I'm going to tell you some other things short of that, because I know that's a big pain. First thing you might take a look at is System Restore. Everybody has, all modern versions of Windows have a System Restore feature that lets you go back in time. So what you could do is restore your system to a period in time before you clicked OK.
All right.
And that may be sufficient to get rid of it. The problem with System Restore is bad guys know about it. And one of the first things bad guys do either is delete your restore points. That's effective. Or if they're really nasty, they put themselves in the restore point. So when you restore it, you're restoring them. Sneaky. These guys are sneaky. Remember, they're smart. They have a lot of free time on their hands, and they're trying to make a little money. They're mostly in Eastern Europe. What it is there are all these very highly trained programmers out there who have no work. And it's a nice way to make a little money on the side. So System Restore is okay, but often not sufficient. There's also a great program that everybody, every time I talk about this stuff, says, Leo, why don't you tell them about Malwarebytes? It's so good. It is good, but again, it has this disadvantage, which is it doesn't get rid of everything. And if it doesn't get rid of the thing that's really bad on your system, you might be operating under the false apprehension that everything's fine, and it's not. Malwarebytes is at malwarebytes.org. It's a free download. Oh, well, they have a free download, and then there's a buy now, so maybe they're starting to charge for this. That would be okay, because it's a good program. Malware, and the bytes is with a Y, bytes, so .org. So this is a program that's designed to scan your drive. In fact, it would absolutely detect what it is that's on your drive right now and get rid of it. So that is another choice. Remember, we mentioned the Microsoft Defender where you put it on a CD, DVD, or USB key and boot to that. That would work as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of different things that you could try. I think in this case, you were not bit badly. You just got a little thing that changed your browser's homepage. Not such a bad thing.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, and you could probably get rid of it with Malwarebytes. So that's probably the thing I would do.
Thanks, Leo.
You're welcome, Jan. I appreciate you letting me use your time up by telling you the long story. But I like to do that every once in a while because there's for every one person who gets in, there's thousands of people listening who have this problem. And many of you just go, I'll live with it, right? Okay, fantastic software, thanks, and then go on with your work. But it's a good idea to get rid of this stuff. If you have NOD32 or a good antivirus, that, of course, is sufficient, too. Any good antivirus is going to, the truth is, block this before it happens. And, Jan, if you had an antivirus and this still happened to you, I would immediately get rid of it and get a better one. Because clearly this antivirus is not doing the job. A good antivirus should have nipped that one right in the bud. Should not have happened. 8888, ask Leo. Some other good ideas from our chat room. DLR says, you should always run as a limited user. I think that's true on Windows. And the problem is people don't do it because it's annoying. It means you have to use your admin account each time. Modern, if you're using Windows 7, you are running as a limited user, even if you're logged in as admin. You have to escalate if you're going to do anything that allows you to install stuff. The reason people say that is malware has the same privileges you do. Malware can't do more than you can do. So sometimes having your account be so limited that you can't install software, for instance, as your day-to-day account is a good thing because that means malware can't install either. Clicking OK won't work because you don't have the rights to install software. The problem is most people don't do this because it's a pain. Every time you want to install software, you have to say run as administrator or log in as an administrator. But, you know, it works. When I set my mom up, but she's now using a Mac, but actually, she's now using an iPad, which is even safer. But when she was using Windows, I had to set her up on Windows 2000. I made sure that she run as a limited user. And I said, Mom, you're not going to be able to update your antivirus, install new software. There's a lot of things you can't do. You're going to have to. And I gave her the administrator password. I said, you're going to have to re-log in as administrator. But she never got bit. She was rock solid. So, yeah, and on a Mac, too, you don't have to run with the administrator account. You really don't. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Let's see who's next. James Burbank, California. Hi, James. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, what a great show you have. I got to say, I've been listening to you for years. Absolutely fantastic. Your disposition, how just friendly you are with everybody. And I'm sure you've answered so many of these questions so many times, but you act like it's the first time you heard them. I mean, you're just great with everybody.
I'm a good actor.
So
I hope Hollywood's listening.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a good actor. Hey, I'm sorry, James. We got to hang on. I appreciate the kind words. You'll be right out of the barrel when we come back. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, this portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by our good friends at Citrix and the amazing GoToMeeting, GOTOMeeting.com. Why do I say that? Because I want you to try it if you haven't tried it yet. Now's a good time because you know, your clients and colleagues probably are traveling or out and about. And GoToMeeting means you can have meetings, in-person meetings, no matter where they are, on your laptop, on your desktop, even on your iPad or your iPhone. That is super sweet. It is a really sophisticated system that lets you meet, share screens, and even share your cameras with, I think you can get 8 people on the screen, which is really, really cool. Visit GoToMeeting.com. You can find out more about how it works. You can collaborate face-to-face with their new HD Faces video conferencing. You can save on teleconferencing because it has integrated audio and video, VoIP conferencing, or telephone. You get a free conference line. And you can throw a meeting from a Mac or a PC, but attendees can join from a Mac, a PC, an iPad, which is really cool, an iPhone or an Android device. And if they're using an iPad, their camera even works and their mic works and their audio works. So you can sit, I love it on an iPad. We've been doing a lot of iPad, I've been attending a lot of iPad meetings. It's really, really great. Try it free right now. Visit gotomeeting.com. Click the orange try it free button. And you can get 30 days absolutely free. The only thing I ask is that in the promo code, you type T-E-C-H, just the word tech. That way the tech guy gets credit. Citrix has been a great sponsor for all of our stuff. And GoToMeeting is one of their best products. I just love it, and I want you to try it today. Visit gotomeeting.com, G-O-T-O, meeting.com. Click the try it free button, the orange try it. Oh, everybody's doing it. Slow down. Click the orange try it free button. And give it a try today for 30 days. The best way to meet online. GoToMeeting.com. Maybe I could do Henry's party as a GoToMeeting. Ha, ha, ha. That would be cool.
Oh, Henry, just tell your friends to get their iPads out.
Oh, that would be a new way to party. GoToMeeting. Somebody called every 867-5309 and every area code in the U.S. A lot of them are, you know, disconnected. But some people actually get the number. It's a Tommy Two-Tone song. And some people actually get the number because they want it. Like, they want you to call them. And there's some fun, apparently some fun things people have done with 867-5309. But I think you probably don't want that number unless you're intentionally doing something with it. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to, was it James in Burbank? Yes, I think so. Sorry, I had to put you on hold for that, James.
No worries, Leo. But you better be able to answer my question.
Just I better now. The pressure's on. All right.
Pressure's on, exactly. Well, on my computer here, I have a laptop, and I was trying to update the Java. And it's every time I've tried to do it, it says installation failed. Mm-hmm. The wizard was interrupted before Java 7 Update 7 could be completed and installed. To complete installation at another time, please run setup again. I've done it 100 times. It won't do it. I've uninstalled my Java, and then I went on a couple message boards, and I saw that if you go under run and you type in, I forgot exactly what it said, but you type in like re-edge it or something like that. And it pulls up these super, super hidden files. You even delete this one, and it still won't let me download Java no matter what I do.
And you're logged in. You're on Windows, obviously.
Yes.
And you're logged in as an administrator.
Yes.
By the way, you really, really, really do want to update Java.
I know. Some people said install an older version. It's just as good.
It's better. The new version is the problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the best thing you can do is turn Java off.
Why don't I have it at all? It won't even detect it. When I went on Java and it says, do you want to see what Java
good.
You have?
Do you need Java?
Oh, I don't know. Do I?
No.
Oh, you don't?
No. In fact, the best thing you can do, unless you need it, and there are occasions that you might need it, the best thing you can do if you don't need Java is get rid of it. Here's the problem. There's a really bad bug in the current version, although I know Oracle has just pushed out a new version as of yesterday. But in the current version of Java, there's a really bad bug that lets a website silently take over your computer without warning you, without asking you to click OK, without anything. That's a really bad bug. And unfortunately, most people just leave Java on even though they don't use it. So if you don't need Java, uninstall it and leave it uninstalled. There's only a few cases where you need Java these days. Java was a programming language designed so that programmers could write one program that would run on a variety of different machines. It's you know, where Java's heavily used right now is in Android and other smartphones, but it's not on the desktop. It's hardly ever used. Some games use Java. Citrix uses Java. Go to my PC. Go to Meeting uses Java. But it's really dangerous to have it on there. What you really don't want is you don't want the browser to silently run Java programs, which it will do by default. So it's sufficient, frankly, I think, to go into your browser and uncheck the Use Java box. But in my opinion, the best thing to do would be uninstall it. Minecraft uses Java. But Minecraft doesn't use it in the browser. Minecraft is a program written in Java that will run using the Java virtual machine. That's all right. If you're running Minecraft and it's, you know, it's the real issue is running automatically in the browser. Because if you go to a malicious page, and by the way, they're springing up like wildfire, and you have this version of Java on there, you don't have I can't even say you don't have the latest version because the latest version has it. It will automatically install bad stuff on your system without anything. Apparently, even the patch that Oracle put out yesterday has a problem. So it's a mess.
On my work computer, do you think I should just uninstall Java on that work-related stuff only?
Yeah. So what will happen is I say everybody uninstall Java now. If you get to something that needs Java, it'll tell you. And let's hope Yeah, and then let's hope by then there'll be a fixed version.
Oh, all right.
Most people are not using it. And so that's even more frustrating because this is a nasty bug that is everywhere. And it's using something that is on your machine that you don't use. Apple stopped putting Java on computers a while ago. Because it's just not used anymore. Yeah, so take it off.
Hey, Leo, thank you very much. You're the Eddie Van.
I'm the Eddie Van Halen. Oh, I hung up on him before I found out who I was. Sorry, quick button. I'm glad you asked about this. I've been meaning to talk about it. Maybe you met Eddie Munster. Is that what? You're the Eddie Munster of technology. Yeah, I am. It does not affect Android devices. Android's written in Java, but Android does not use the Java virtual machine provided by Oracle, and that's where the problem lies. It uses its own. In fact, that's why Oracle sued Google and lost, by the way. So if you uninstall Java, it's not installed in your browser. It's installed in your operating system. So just go to Add, Remove Programs or Programs and Features and uninstall it. You can also go into your browser. And I would suggest doing this too. Let's be extra careful, and disable the Java plugin. Just uncheck where it says enable Java. Do not confuse Java with JavaScript. Despite the names, they're not related. They're not the same. Most websites do use JavaScript. Most websites do not use Java. And it is safe, as far as we know, to use a standalone program in Java. It's the problem is these browsers that launch it automatically. That's the problem. The Mac version is not safe. The Linux version is not safe. The Windows version is not safe. Java is unsafe at any speed. Nick in San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going well. How are you?
Pretty good. My question to you is this. I have two routers at my house and a firewall called Firebox. And it's an Edge X5. I'm trying to run Windows Server 2008 R2 in a virtual machine on my computer. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can have that be the primary DNS and still access the Internet.
That's an interesting question. You want to, in effect, run your own domain name system.
Right.
Huh. Yeah, I think you could do that. the way the domain name system works is on your local computer, you check first to see if you know where a site is, because sites are, as you know, by number, not name. So you enter in yahoo.com. It has to look up what's the number, just like looking it up in a phone book. It starts on its own system, and then it goes, if it doesn't find that, goes to your internet service provider normally. That's the DNS entry that's in your network settings on your router or on your computer. And then your internet service provider, if it doesn't have that information, goes on up the chain to the final authority, which there are 13 computers that are the canonical domain name servers, and they have the actual phone book. I don't think there's any reason you couldn't set up your own and make sure that it does the same thing your ISP does. It's kind of technical, but you can do it. It's one of those crazy Kyle Benham medleys. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, our musical director, Kyle Benham, obviously bored to tears. He puts together his playlist, and we make them available on the website, techguylabs.com. So I guess we should talk about this Java vulnerability. I should really have been talking about it all day because it's so ugly. Java is a programming language which was in great vogue in the mid-90s. It was created by Sun Microsystems. A guy named James Gosling wrote it. The idea was, it was a good idea, by the way, you write a program in the language Java, and then it will run on any machine that has the correct Java virtual machine software on it. So you're writing a kind of a program that's written to an imaginary machine that then gets interpreted on everything. And the truth is, it was great. It was really a success. It had real strong security features built into it. But, you know, 95, 96, it was a different world then. The hackers are much more aggressive now. And they banged on it till they find some serious exploits. An exploit that has been part of Java, we believe, for years. For years. Now, Java is used widely on smartphones. All BlackBerry apps are written in Java. Because it's so lightweight, it can run easily on low-end hardware. And all of Android is actually in Java. But the good news about Android is it's not using Sun Oracle's version of Java. It uses its own, which apparently doesn't have the same problem. Microsoft Windows and all versions of Linux use a Java from Oracle. Macintoshes, due to some court actions in the deep, dark past, use an Apple version of Java. However, all the current versions of Java, Apple and Oracle, have this flaw. Oracle put out an emergency patch yesterday, which at least one security firm says has the same problem. We haven't heard back from Oracle on that one. They say they're analyzing it. So the truth is, and this is not the first problem with Java. There's been problems all year long with Java. It's turned out to be a security nightmare. The good news is you probably don't need it. There are some programs that use it. Minecraft, which is a very popular video game, is written in Java. That's why it works on Mac, Linux, and Windows equally well. So you might have Java installed to run Minecraft. That's fine. In that case, just go to your browser and disable Java. Just say, not JavaScript, by the way, just disable Java, and you're good. Most new browsers now, before they run Java, Safari does this, Chrome does this, will say, hey, Java wants to run. You sure that's okay? If you didn't try to run a program that you know uses Java, say a game program or Citrix or something like that, you should say no, don't. You should pretty much get in the habit of saying no to that question. Do you want Java to run? No, don't allow that. Because if you just went to a web page and you got that pop-up, that means that web page is probably trying to infect you. So say no, don't allow it, and you're fine. You might want to disable it in your browser, and if you know you're not using it, you might want to uninstall it. Every system is set up so that if it needs to use Java, it will tell you, hey, before I can run this program, you need to download Java. With any luck, there will be a good, successful patch to fix this problem available, and when you do download Java next, it'll be clean. But don't have it on your system if you're not using it. It's just too dangerous. It's just too dangerous. And if you have a Macintosh, unless you explicitly installed Java, you don't have it. If you have an iPad, you will never have it. Apple will never allow Java on the iPad or the iPhone. It's on Android phones, but it's safe. It's on all desktop computers except for the Macintosh. Uninstall it. Then you'll be fine. Ray in Riverside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ray.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, I got a question to ask you. I received a call this last week. It was from some guy from overseas, you could tell that. And they're saying, gee, you've got an infection, a virus, et cetera. We're from Microsoft, et cetera.
Yeah, we're from Microsoft. We're here to help.
And I started thinking this doesn't make quite good sense.
Good man, Ray. You're
so
suspicious immediately.
And then he calls back. So I'm trying to help you, yeah. So then about 2 hours later, he called like three times.
Oh.
All right. And I did my natural virus scans and all that and found no viruses, et cetera. And I believe that was just
it's a lie.
Somebody.
It's a lie. They call people on Macintoshes It's a lie. So what they're doing, this is a sweatshop, usually out of India or China.
Right.
And the sweatshop calls numbers randomly. They're going through all the numbers in the book. And he says, "Hello, Ray. I am calling from Microsoft, and you have a problem." And what he'll do is they're very clever. They'll actually get you to run a system monitor on your system, and he'll say, "See, that is a sure sign. You see that? That is a sure sign you're infected. I need to take control of your computer to fix this." And you'd be amazed how many people, Ray, do not have your instinct to say what? And do it. And then you know what the guy does immediately? He installs a virus on your computer.
Right, okay. Okay, because that didn't make sense, the whole thing. And you just mentioned this other virus thing. I ran that same scan, and nothing came up on that.
No, you're all right. Until you let him fix your computer, you're okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that. Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Good man, Ray. Your instinct is great, and I'm really glad you called, because there are thousands of people listening right now who will either get that call this week or already got it. And I pray that you did not say yes when he said, "Can I just put this software on your computer? It will help me fix it," because it will not. Look, Microsoft does not call you. They got they got more to do.
It didn't make sense. So even he went as far as I have Dell, which I actually have the Dell software program.
He guessed. He guessed.
And I said, if anything, I'm going to go to them, ask them to go.
Right.
Go scan me.
Let them do it. Now so you're fine. You do not have a virus. He was calling a random number. He might have said some things that convinced you. They don't care. They call people with Macs. And when you say, "Well, wait a minute, I have a Mac," they go, click. But the part of the problem is these guys are very convincing because, as far as I can tell, in many cases, they are actually tech support people with some free time.
Okay.
So the same companies that I've been told that contract out tech support to big companies, when they're not busy, will have them make these calls. So they sound very realistic.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second here,
Ray, you have... I'm so glad you have those instincts.
Yeah, I am too. Don't need their problems.
Exactly. And, because I get calls frequently from people who say, "Hey, I did this. Did I make a mistake?" And then I have to tell them, "Yes, you did."
Good deal. I appreciate it. I got one more quick question. I'll let you go. I have more camera than I have the ability to use. I have the EOS 7D by Canon. Incredible
camera. Oh, great camera. Oh, yeah.
It's just phenomenal. If I only knew how it worked. I love the YouTube video idea that you make the video things. How can you what's a program that's easy to work that you can go video to video? So like, let's say you want to do a certain thing, then later on attach more to it.
Video editing. You already have it if you have Windows. It's called Windows Movie Maker.
Windows Movie Maker. Okay.
Yeah. If it's not on your system, and it may not be, you can download it for free from Microsoft. Visit get.live.com and download Windows Movie Maker. It's quite good. It's certainly good enough for free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Dangerous infections.
Do you see a warning?
Yes, I have lots of warnings.
Lots of warnings.
Can I click on those ones?
No, don't click anywhere. You don't need to click anywhere, okay?
Oh.
Why? You will not get anything by clicking on that. You will not get, you will get nothing.
Oh, right. Is it dangerous to click on it?
Yeah, they are the hidden infections.
We're listening to a YouTube video of one of these calls made by one of our listeners, a fellow from Scotland. It's on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's actually quite funny. Just search for Microsoft Computer Support Scam. And you can see the tricks that these people do. Yeah, it's very credible. Very credible. But it's not true. It's they're scamming you. So I'm glad that our caller knew that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. It's almost done. Actually, don't call me because I won't have time to talk to you. We have a couple more calls we're going to get to. Before we do that, though, let's say hello to Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for 40 years. And now the Gizwiz. He talks about gadgets on our show every week. Hey, Dick.
Leo, how are you?
Have you ever got one of those calls?
Oh, yeah. Wait, she's on hold. Hang on a second. I'll be right back with you. Okay, I won't click on anything.
Don't click on anything. That could be a virus. Oh, my goodness.
That is a riot.
Isn't that fun? But you know what? It's believable, especially if you're a neophyte novice user. And people get fooled by this a lot. So don't be fooled.
I will not be fooled. I have you in my corner. How can I be fooled?
Really? Can I come out of the corner now? Because it's boring.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Okay. No, you know what? I heard that your air conditioning is down, right?
Yes, I've been dying in here.
Yeah, okay, so I put a heater on. I want to feel your pain. The 110 at Disneyland.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. My goodness. So actually, fall has hit here in Northern California. It's kind of chilling, cooling off a little bit outside, not inside.
Oh, okay.
How about you? Is New York City getting a little...
New York City's having a very warm day for this time of the year. It's 92.
No. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Well, show us a gadget. Maybe you want to mist us.
Yeah. Actually, a successful gadget that came out of a Kickstarter project.
Oh, I like that.
We're forever looking for headphones with cords that won't crunch up or wrinkle up or tie up in your pocket. Seems to be impossible. You could make the neatest little bundle, put it in your pocket.
Oh, yeah.
You take it out. It's like someone was in there knotting it and making it impossible. So this project came up with Cord Cruncher, and they sent me one. And when I took it out of the package, it's a latex sleeve, 16 inches long, earbuds sticking out of one end, phone jack on the other. And I thought, well, this is really good if you don't mind keeping your head right up against your MP3 player.
It's kind of short because it's crunched.
It's kind of short. Yeah, exactly. So I looked at the instructions. It's kind of clever. So you hold the jack and the earbuds and you pull on them, and you can pull out up to 42 inches of cable. Then you can comfortably listen to your tunes or your Netflix or whatever on your portable device. And then when it's time to put it back in its sleeve, you hold both ends of the latex tube, pull on it, stretch it out, and the cable goes inside again, and you're back to a 16-inch tube with just a little dongle hanging out each side. You can roll it up. You can actually click the ends together. You could wear it. You can hang it over a backpack. It's kind of clever. The sound is very decent.
So the cruncher is part of the headphone. You get the headphones with the cruncher. They're not separate.
Yes, exactly. Yes, a lot of people.
Oh, see, I'd love to have this on my good headphones, but you have to use their headphones.
You have to use their headphones. Mm. They're not bad. I mean, the whole outfit is $25.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's pretty good. And I said to the people, so these come in red, blue, and black. Is that correct? She said, no, they come in pearl blue,
ooh,
rocket red,
yeah,
and matte black. Ooh. Oh, that's so different than what I had in mind. I was just thinking red, black, and blue.
Now, do I have to buy it on Kickstarter? Or?
You know what, Cord Cruncher, Jason and I looked last week, and it had not gone to other websites yet, but it should be soon. They're kind of new. I mean, I think they've been around for a while.
So this is interesting, because they raised $60,000 on Kickstarter to kind of make the product.
Yes.
People who donated $20 or more got one. But I guess at some point the plan is, well, they'll start selling them online.
Absolutely. And I think down the line they hope to be able to come out with a technology where you could probably use your own earbuds. But for now, just the $25 thing is what they have.
And I see you can shop on cordcruncher.com.
That's where they are for now.
Aha. Not stores only. But you've tried it and you vouch for it.
Yeah, I do. I like the way they store, and the sound, as I said, is decent for...
They don't have a microphone, right? They're just...
They do not have... No, they are listening only. So they're not for your making phone calls and music at the same time.
You know, I kind of got fooled. I don't know if fooled is the right word.
No, you're never fooled. Come on.
This lady called me from India, and I was very... No. Callie Lewis, who does GeekBeat.tv, told me about these Aftershocks headphones. Have you tried these?
No.
They don't go in your ear. They go on your temple.
Oh, are these bone phones?
Yeah, but it's like bone conduction.
You know what?
They don't sound that good. I got them.
No, and they're wild. The very first ones were $189.
Yeah, these at least were cheap. They were $60 if they have a microphone, $49 if you don't have a microphone. But you know the thing I don't like about these, you can't hear. They go right on your temple. I don't know if that's because the sound's going through my bone or just going around the corner into my ear, but they tickle my temples. If I turn them up loud enough, I can hear them. My temples go.
If you just want to your temples, there's a little device that's just $20. The temple tickler.
The temple tickler. Oh.
Yeah.
Is that on Kickstarter?
Yes.
Okay.
It will be in about an hour.
Let's make a video. Dick's website is gizwiz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z dot B-I-Z.
And today is the brand new, it's September 1st.
Oh, good. We can finally find out what that Tupperware lid was.
You know, hundreds of people said Tupperware.
It's not.
You know what? It's very close.
It was like a pie crust thing.
It's called Baker's Band, and it snaps on to most casserole dishes. And the object is it doesn't let the food bubble over. So you snap it on to the round casserole or the oblong.
It's a lip.
It's a lip. That's exactly right.
It goes around your pie plate.
Right. But it's
silicone. It's not that the pie doesn't bubble over. It just gets caught by the lip.
Well, yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay.
It's oven proof.
A casserole dish lip.
Lip.
Now, you gave away 12 magazines, Mad Magazines, for the right answer. Did you get 12?
We only got one right answer.
One.
We won. So I gave away 30 for the silly answers.
And I'm sure there were quite a few. Now we've done.
Submarine portholes. And
we're doing it again. If you go to gizwiz.biz, I'm looking at it. I know it's radio, so you can't see it. So you have to go to gizwiz.biz and click the what the heck is it for a chance.
This is radio? I put pants on.
Oh, no. So you didn't need to. Okay. It's so hot in here, I took them off. So there. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what this is. This is, anyway, you don't have to know what it is. If you just give a clever answer, you could have a chance of winning.
Or stupid.
An autographed copy of the November-December issue of Mad Magazine. Dickie D, thank you so much.
Welcome, sir.
Stick around. Dick, are you going to do your Giz Fizz?
I'm doing my Giz Fizz today.
After the radio show, Dick sticks around and answers questions, plays match game, does stuff like that. So if you're watching the live stream from our studios at the Tech Guy Labs, we let him take over. You know, it's good because I have to rush home. You know why? Henry, my son, is having his 18th birthday party tonight.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Wasn't he having it also last weekend?
Yeah, it's pretty much been a month-long celebration. So I found a phony sheriff's badge, and I'm hoping that will give me some authority.
I hope you got some phony handcuffs. I'm going to have some real handcuffs.
I need real. Oh, man. He says, no, I'm just going to have 30 of my close friends. And all week long, strangers have been walking up to me saying, I hear there's a party at your place. I'm very nervous. I've seen enough movies like Risky Business to know I'm in deep trouble here.
Yeah. Can I say a single word?
Yeah.
Drop cam.
No, I'm staying there. I'm not leaving.
Oh, okay.
I'm standing at the door. I'm giving them the stink eye as they come in. I see you. You're here. I know I'm here. Oh, Lord. Have a great Labor Day weekend, Dickie D.
You too, sir.
All right. Take care. Let's get back to the phones. Kyle, there's no break here, is there?
You're good to go.
All right. Well,
phone calls.
I think we have time for at least one more call, starting with Jerry in Carlsbad, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Leo.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Oh, really good to talk to you. I'll be quick. I turned on my machine this morning looking for my DVD drive, and it is totally gone. I've got it down to the message that says Windows cannot start this hardware device because its configuration information in the registry is incomplete or damaged.
Oh, that's code interesting.
19. Yeah. I called HP. And they said basically that if I would allow them to take control of the machine, they might be able to fix.
Yeah,
what
they need
think.
To edit the registry, and I would let them do it. Better them than you. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh, a MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.